Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Recently, we've been hearing a lot from politicians insisting that not everyone needs a four-year college education, and they're right. That's something North Carolina recognized nearly 70 years ago. In 1957, the state created the first Community College Act, which in turn created a system of tax-supported community colleges around the state. And today, there are 58 colleges spanning 100 counties and spread out in such a way that almost every North Carolinian is within a 30-minute drive of a community college. These institutions focus on pre-college education, workforce development and retraining, support for economic development, and classes for adult education aimed at improving their quality of life. And enrollment, well, let's just say it's blowing up. In the last fiscal year, nearly all of the 58 community colleges in the state experienced enrollment growth, with Central Piedmont Community College reaching record enrollment. So what's driving this? How is this investment in education paying off? We look into that this hour with Dr. Tracy Clark, Senior Vice President of Strategy and Organizational Excellence at Central Piedmont Community College. She is here along with Dr. Natasha Lipscomb, Vice President for Student Success at Rowan Cabarrus Community College, and Christy Lefevers, Associate Dean of High School Programming at Catawba Valley Community College. And to wrap it all up, Hannah Vinweza McClellan is with us. She's a senior reporter covering education news and policy for Education NC. Welcome to you all. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. So, since Central Piedmont Community College experienced this record enrollment in this last year, Tracy, 20,600 degree-seeking students in the fall, a 9% increase, which brings your total enrollment across all programs, I think, to around 30,000 students, which is a lot. Let us start with a basic question. Why? What's driving this?
Well, thank you for having us on this morning and highlighting the value of community colleges. At Central Piedmont, part of what we've seen is really being responsive to community needs and making sure that we've got the programming that is necessary for workforce demand. And so we're seeing increased needs for skilled trades, healthcare, IT programming. And so being able to design those programs, being flexible in not only when they're offered, but how they're offered to attract different groups of learners has really been essential to our growth and our ability to contribute in the community. I'm sure we'll get to a little bit about our partnerships with our local school systems. Dual enrollment has been increasing with our students as well. Being able to enroll at Central Piedmont while you're still enrolled in high school does provide an option for those high school students to complete their credential and or transfer to one of our other partner institutions and save not only money but time in getting that done.
Let me ask all of you this same question, because I'm sure there's a slight difference in all three of your schools at Rowan and Central Piedmont Community College and Catawba Valley. But where do you see the greatest uptick in the demand for what you offer? Is it coming from people in high school, coming out of high school, more people who are not yet necessarily ready for a full institution but plan to go to one later on, more young people trying to cut expenses by doing the first 2 years at a community college and then going for the final two for their bachelor's degree at a more traditional college? What's driving, where do you see the biggest uptick? And I'll start with you, Natasha. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. And thank you for having us on the talk today. I would say yes, you are well-versed and up on your community college research here. All of those areas are ticking. When you ask about, what is really driving it, in community college world, we normally see increases in enrollment during recession times. So when there is high unemployment, People look to be retrained, reskilled, retooled to make sure that they're ready for the next wave of opportunity in their community. And so these times are a little different, and COVID pushed us there. COVID pushed us there where it's not necessarily your traditional recession that's going on. But we do believe that our open door institutional philosophy with community colleges, meaning there's no selective admissions requirement, opens the door for all of those people, all of the sectors, all of the folks who have those interests, whether it's transfer or economic development, workforce development. Our goal of access has always been the thing that's driven our enrollment. And now I'd like to just really talk about this open door model and why the post-secondary degree completion is at the forefront of everybody's attention. Now, you mentioned earlier that some folks are saying you don't need a four-year degree, but the numbers, I'm sure Hannah will tell us in just a little bit, that the numbers still say that the greatest earning potential you're going to have is a bachelor's degree, is obtaining that bachelor's degree. So we're focused on education attainment, and we have many ways that you could enter this open door. So it's not just, you know, having a high school GPA that's, you know, that's going to be the deciding factor of when you get in or how you get in. So we look at all sorts of things. We call them multiple measures. So when you have an open door and you have many ways you can start, and it's not about if you can start with us, but where you start with us and how you start with us, it becomes a real opportunity. And so we're seeing the biggest uptick at Roy and Cabarrus in our high school transfer. So we do have almost 30% of our students enrollment are in cooperative and innovative high school programs. That's the dual enrollment programs, whether they're on one of our campuses as an early college student, or they're attending their native high school and attending Career and College Promise programs. We see that uptick. And then we're seeing them actually come after that to sort of create the next step of their opportunity in community colleges.
Christy Lefevre, you are the Associate Dean of High School Programming at Catawba Valley Community College up near Hickory, and we're going to talk a lot about high school and these cooperative efforts between community colleges and offering credits, college credits, to people in high school later on. But you are unique in that you are a product of a community college education. You worked your way up in your position that you're holding there at Catawba Valley, but you went to a community college, and your story, I suppose, could serve as an inspiration to a lot of young people just about to enter these community colleges. Tell us why you chose the path you chose and how it worked out for you.
Well, thank you for having us, Mike. I listen to WFAE every morning, as do my daughters, who are currently community college students. Well, one actually graduated, and one is one of our early college students. So we're very familiar with your show. So growing up, I'm from Morganton, North Carolina. I'm born and bred in Western North Carolina and a proud North Carolinian. And growing up, no one in my family had gone off to college. Some family members maybe had taken a few community college classes, but I remember as a little girl driving past Western Piedmont Community College in Morganton, and my mom would make comments like, you know, when you graduate high school, you can go over there to school. And I think at that time, because we had not seen it modeled in my family, you know. Also, I think to add to that is, you know, manufacturing's been huge. Furniture was very big and in my area at that time, and it still is. But we had a lot of blue collar workers, a lot of middle class workers in Western North Carolina, and we still have that today. And so Western Piedmont met a need. It met me where I was. And I think that that's, you know, what is really important to see about community colleges is we meet students where they are, whether that is that high school student or it's an adult learner or someone coming back for continuing education. So I would just say that it was that the community college was in my backyard and met that need for me. And because I hadn't really ever known anyone to go off to a four-year school, I think it seemed too big. It seemed like maybe too big of a step to take. But the community college being right there, enabling me to come, I worked full time while I was taking classes at the community college. And then what was very important and what drove me to be able to go to the next step and why I am here today would be because the faculty members that supported me at the community college and said, you know, the next thing you can do is transfer this degree to a four-year school. And In fact, my accounting instructor at Western Piedmont gave me my first chance to teach at the community college and gave me a part-time job and really encouraged me and mentored me. And so I think that adds so much value to all community colleges would be the faculty and staff that we have that care about our students. And we don't just see what we do as a job, but truly having a servant's heart. And I think the heart of an educator, everyone from if it's in our business office, financial aid, student services, as well as, of course, our faculty to support those students, meet them where they are and help them see what the next steps could be. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. I was just going to say, we're talking about the increasing growth in the number in the demand for community colleges around the state. And as we go through the hour, we'll talk about the many offerings and different opportunities citizens of North Carolina have in interacting with these community colleges this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Hannah McClellan, you are a reporter. This is one of your beats. You're a senior reporter on education for Education NC. Put the community college system in this state into some sort of context in terms of the varied educational opportunities that North Carolinians have at their disposal from high school through four-year education into doctoral degree programs. Where do the community colleges fit in to all of this?
Yeah, so as a few people have mentioned, one of the large offerings that our community colleges offer is the college transfer pathway. And so this can look like high school students who are dually enrolled, taking classes at their local community college, either using those credits when they apply to college, or building the credits so that they can enroll in community college after graduation to go ahead and finish out their associate degree before then trying to transfer to college. I will note there are various programs, including early colleges, where students can actually finish their associate degree for free while they are actually still enrolled in high school. And so I think that is definitely a shining program in North Carolina community colleges and one that gets a lot of recognition. There are also curriculum programs for students and adult learners after college. They can enroll in things and then also still go to four-year college, or they can focus on building their associate degree. And then there are also continuing education programs. And this bucket kind of houses a lot of the credential programs and workforce education items that we've talked about. Well,
where do we stand in terms of other states? It seems like I mentioned that everybody in the state is about 30 minutes away, at least no more than 30 minutes away from a community college. So how does that compare to Virginia, to South Carolina, to other nearby states? Do we have a more robust system of community colleges, Hannah, or is it about the same?
Yeah, so at least regionally, we do have a more robust system than some of our neighboring states. You mentioned at the beginning of the talk that North Carolina has 58 community colleges, which actually makes it only second to California in the number of colleges. We also have about 600,000 students. In comparison, Virginia has 23 community colleges and about 200,000 students. And South Carolina has 16 colleges and about 135,000 students. So I think talking about enrollment, planning for it, and celebrating enrollment growth is important and matters. But I also think it's important to just note the high baseline enrollment in North Carolina and the access available.
As enrollment has gone up, of course, that has created some challenges for community colleges because that requires more money, more staff, more this, more that. And we're going to talk about an increase in funding for community colleges that is coming their way right now, thanks to the General Assembly, how that happened and how much that money is and how they'll put it to work when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about community colleges, their success in the state, their explosion of enrollment. that has taken place in the last several years. Dr. Tracy Clark is here. She's Senior Vice President for Strategy and Organizational Excellence at Central Piedmont Community College. Dr. Natasha Lipscomb is Vice President for Student Success. I want to talk about that at Rowan Cabarrus Community College. Christy Lefebvre is Associate Dean of High School Programming at Catawba Valley Community College. And Hannah McClellan is a Senior Reporter for Education NC. Hannah, the General Assembly passed a bill recently to increase funding for community colleges. They did so over Governor Cooper's veto, which was not based on the funding portion of this bill for community college. He vetoed it because it was a sweeping bill that included, among other things, requiring sheriffs to cooperate with ICE, which he disagrees with, and expanded the school voucher program, which he is also opposed to because he feels that it hurts public education. But because they have a supermajority, the legislature overrode that veto, and so this funding is coming to community colleges. Talk about what this bill does, Hannah, for these colleges.
Yeah, so the bill included crucial enrollment growth funds for actually both the public K-12 system and the community college system. For the community colleges, that was about $64 million for enrollment growth and nearly $13 million for receipts for community colleges. And these funds,
what does that mean, receipts?
Receipts basically refers to the tuition and fees that community colleges collect. That goes to a fund that the state then disperses back to the community colleges. And so the enrollment growth funds were part of the community college system's legislative ask this session. By law, the General Assembly is not required to provide enrollment growth, but any year that the community college system has had enrollment growth, they always have. This year, colleges were negatively impacted by the delay for two reasons. First, because of the delay, they had to wait longer to know if the enrollment growth would be funded. And second, this year, as we've mentioned, saw unusually high enrollment growth for an unusually high number of colleges, which meant that it was negatively impacting more colleges. So 52 of the state's 58 colleges saw enrollment growth last fiscal year, meaning that without these growth funds, they were facing budgets on outdated numbers. For many colleges, this was the difference of millions of dollars and would have led to having to cut back on personnel or programs potentially.
So the State Board of Education, or State Board of Community Colleges, excuse me, says that a lot of these institutions were experiencing enrollment spikes and were desperate, those are their words, desperate for funds and had not received it. Had they not received, they would have had to make some very difficult decisions in the spring semester. How many of your institutions, Tracy, Christy, Natasha, how many of you were facing that in the absence of these funds? And I'll start with Tracy.
Well, we were having to have multiple conversations, scenario A, scenario B, scenario C. A, we're funded. B, we're not. C, oh no, the sky's falling. And literally, it may sound like I'm exaggerating, but for many of our colleges, that was the case because we're serving more, since we're funded in the rears, we send our money back, just as Hannah explained very eloquently. We're serving more students on fewer funds. But now that the bill has been passed, and we look, I think we were all on pins and needles tracking it. Now that it's passed, we have the ability to not only kind of recoup some of what we've already put out to fund the education of additional students, but we can continue to expand our programming, additional supports for faculty and staff. You have to keep in mind, not only are we offering the development, but we've got top-notch experts in our classrooms. Not only are we trying to continue to recruit that talent, we're trying to retain that talent. And being able to keep up with salary demands, being able to add those classes that are in high demand to drive economic growth is important. So being able to expand those programs, support faculty and staff, but also with our student services function, I'm sure Natasha can elaborate on that much more, being able to have the wraparound supports for those students who, many of whom are either coming to us for the first time, they're those transition students, being able to provide resources for them is challenging for us if we don't have the resources ourselves. So definitely being able to run those multiple scenarios, and we're excited that the bill is passed and the funds are on the way.
As you were talking, Tracy, Natasha and Christy were nodding in recognition of many of the things that you were saying, and I guess that means, Christy and Natasha, that you had similar concerns about not getting this funding, and now that you've gotten it, you're a little more relaxed. How will you put this extra money to work, Natasha?
Well, you know, I don't have my CFO sitting next to me to prod, or our college president, Dr. Carol Spaulding, here to nod. But similar to what Tracy was saying, several conversations around Dr. Spaulding's cabinet table about we're waiting on these funds, and it's they're all ready to work. I would say these are funds we've been waiting on to continue the work that we do, and we're being very creative in trying to figure out how we don't put the engine in part, how we don't stop what we're doing in support of this enrollment growth while we're waiting on folks to figure out if they're going to play together well. I'll say that. We have to keep going. The students are at our doors. They're in our classrooms. Our faculty and staff are ready to serve. And so we were able to continue the work and not have to sort of have these plans A, B, and C out there. So that's what it has done is allowed us to sort of breathe more deeply and freely as we continue, and to put our foot back on the gas and move forward to serve our students.
Because of the timing of this bill through the legislature, Hannah, a lot of these schools were in the process, as they've been talking about here, of making alternative plans in the absence of these funds. Because of the increasing popularity of community colleges, I'm just curious why the legislature, A, bundled this additional funding in a bill that included so many other things that they knew the governor would veto. They knew also that they had the supermajority to override that veto, but that adds time to the process, which didn't have to be part of this. So why did they take that approach? Why wasn't this just a separate bill?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably plenty of reasons one could say. I do think part of the reason is that this was the General Assembly's attempt at a mini budget bill. And so this session, they did not successfully pass a compromise budget, even though both chambers proposed one. And so kind of their way of being able to pass something with their main priorities for the session was in September, they passed this mini budget bill, which then kind of combined all of their main priorities and things that they were hearing from constituents that were the most important. And so, like I said, that included the enrollment funds for both community colleges and public schools, but it also included a number of other priorities. And I think, you know, both parties, when they're in control, will use the budget to include some of their caucus's main priorities. So I don't think that is necessarily unusual. I will say that the timing definitely impacted community colleges. For most colleges, ideally spring budgeting is done by November. And so even though community colleges knew there was a supermajority, there's still a matter of like being fiscally responsible and waiting for that money to like physically be on the way and in the accounts to like actually finalize budgets. And so as a few people have mentioned, I think a lot of leaders were anxiously tracking to see when that override vote would take place.
So I want to talk about three of the major thrusts that community colleges are involved in, and they are this dual enrollment program for high schoolers as kind of a bridge between high school and college, workforce development, and adult learning. Hannah, community colleges can be an end unto themselves. You just go there and that's the end of your educational experience once you've completed the coursework that you signed up for. But it also can be this way for high schoolers who maybe are not ready for college, or who want to save some money on college to get to college, a four-year institution after a while. How do most students use these community colleges, Hannah?
Yeah, I do want to note that even for the students who are not using community colleges as college transfer, there's still opportunities for students to continue to expand their learning opportunities. There's a number of pathways to stack credentials, for example, so that even students who aren't interested in exploring four-year college at any point have multiple opportunities to return to their community college over time to expand on their certificates and qualifications and learning experiences. But for high school students specifically, there are three dual enrollment pathways that students can enter. So one of those is college transfer, which we've talked about, and that can be structured for students to earn their associate degree during high school, but also it can just be taking classes as they have time along with their high school courses. There's also career and technical education, which we've been seeing growth in at the high school level, as well as in community college general enrollment. And that involves things like welding, plumbing. You can get certificates, but there's also a rise in students taking apprenticeships, which essentially allows them to have on-the-job training, which can help them transfer to that after graduating with their certificate. And then the last option is cooperative innovative high schools, which most people know as early colleges. And so those refer to students typically during their junior year, they transfer to this college, and then they're just taking the dual enrollment classes. There are some early colleges that have courses all 4 years, where the first two are mostly at the high school level, and then the second two are strictly with the community college.
Christy, you're in charge of this at Catawba Valley Community College. You're the high school associate dean of high school programming. How are most of the high schoolers using you in that sense?
So at CVCC, about 40% of our enrollment is through Career and College Promise, along with our two early colleges. We serve two counties, Catawba County and Alexander County. We have a total of 10 public high schools in four high school systems. Catawba County has three high school systems. And we have two early colleges. One is here at CVCC and the other is in Alexander County. We offer our classes at the high school. So we have our instructors physically go to the high school for both the college transfer as well as CTE. We have welding in the high school with our instructors go to the high school, teach welding, teach automotive. So the students are dually enrolled, getting high school credit and CVCC or college credit at the same time. Our early colleges, our students actually start ninth grade taking their high school classes and college classes at the same time. They start with one college class their freshman ninth grade year, and then they build on that as they go. So it's really a variety, as well as us going to the high school, the students come to us or take our classes online. So another resource that we have that I think has really helped grow our program is our scholar advisors, who are our employee, and they serve as a liaison but are physically located in each public high school. And then we have a scholar advisor for private school and homeschool students that is that go-between or like enrollment manager advisor to help advise those students.
These programs, Natasha, not only give high school students a chance to get a leg up, to move through the system perhaps a little faster than they would, which saves them money and saves them time. As I understand it, it's also tuition free. These courses that give you college credit and even technical career credits are tuition free. This sounds like both an economic boon to the student and their family, but also to the general economy. Is it?
Yes. Yes, we do. We're very proud of the Career and College Promise program in North Carolina. And as you heard the numbers, 30%, 40% of overall enrollment at many of our community colleges come from this segment of our student population. And the partnerships between the high schools and our local community colleges are really important to that. There, of course, is legislation and state board code in place for all of these programs to work. But that also means the partnership with our universities are important because the word gets out and our biggest proponents, our biggest cheerleaders, if you will, for Career and College Promise are parents. And so the parents who realize the time and the money that their students are saving, that their families are saving, and the credentials and the college credit that does turn into what we promised it would be. And that is truly the promise side of Career and College Promise. Not only that they're going to go tuition waived, we don't like to say free because somebody's paying for it. We want them to make sure they understand that.
We have to take a break at least for a moment here. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Had to hand it off for the people listening in the morning. I want to come back to you, Natasha, because you're in charge of student success at Rowan Community College. These high school students that are taking college credits while also going to high school are one subset of students. There's another subset of students who come to community colleges because they haven't done well in high school. They're not ready for college, but they want to go to those colleges. So what kind of students seek you out, and how do you help them? How do you, since you're in charge of student success, these people have a bad taste in their mouth when it comes to school, many of them. So how do you help them through?
Yeah, thank you for the question. And I believe you're talking about one of the most important segments, I would say, of our learning population, and that's our adult learner or our working learner, we call them as well, because some of these folks, They don't necessarily come with a bad taste in their mouths. They just, life has required them to take another path before they get to education, or they're trying to do it in combination. So I love the question, and actually think that this question is important for the work of anyone connected in a community. I'm talking chamber boards, I'm talking lawmakers, I'm talking church leaders. Everyone needs to know about community colleges and what we offer to help with success. So my title, I tell folks all the time, my title says student success, but my team, who's amazing, we are not the only ones responsible for the success of students. We need everyone on board. And like I said, that's community, that's inside and outside the walls of community colleges. So I've studied, we've had several surveys of these adult learners at Rowan Cabarrus, and you got to know your students. And I know that 38% of my students are parents. I know that 66% of my students have an emergency each year that they don't have the funds to take care of. And if they don't have some kind of help, they're going to have to put school to the side to keep working. I know that 42% of them have anxiety disorder, and I've got to have social workers on staff and people who can help them. So we understand that it's more than just the academic piece, but the student support services that are going to help make them successful.
We're talking about the opportunities provided by community colleges across the state, and we have three representatives of three schools, Central Piedmont Community College, Rowan Cabarrus Community College, and Catawba Valley Community College with us this morning, and we will continue in a moment the Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about community colleges throughout the state and the burgeoning enrollment at those colleges, who they serve and why and how. Dr. Tracy Clark is with us. She is Senior Vice President for Strategy and Organizational Excellence at Central Piedmont Community College. Christy Lefevers is Associate Dean for High School Programming at Catawba Valley Community College. Dr. Natasha Lipscomb, Vice President for Student Success at Rowan Cabarrus Community College. And Hannah McClellan reports on all this for Education NC. The Career and College Promise program is it's a dual program where students can get their high school, they can be in high school and still get college credits free of charge, so they get a leg up. Homeschooled students are also eligible for this program, and in Mecklenburg County, at least, I understand that enrollment has jumped from just over 7,000 in 2023 to over 11,500 this year. How much of this is coming from homeschoolers coming to Central Piedmont to get the leg up on college? Tracy?
Well, we're finding that there's increased enrollment, just as you've mentioned, in homeschooling. So it's not just about fishing in one pond. It's about making sure that we understand that there are dual enrollment eligible students in public schools, in homeschools, charter schools, as well as our private parochial schools. And so really, whenever it comes to the population, we've talked again about the open door philosophy and accessibility of community colleges. So definitely we've been able to see that increase in being able to offer those sections that where we've got faculty who understand the needs of younger learners, as well as those who understand the needs of our adult learners, has been valuable in contributing to that uptick.
Because these students, much of their education has been at home in very unique situations, Natasha, is this a good way for them to integrate themselves into a situation where they're in a classroom with 25, 30 other strangers that they haven't experienced while being homeschooled? In other words, is it a good bridge to get to a college education, to come to a community college and get these credits ahead of time?
Yes, the community college environment is one that mirrors in many ways the workforce. So every one of our classrooms, we don't have classes specifically for high school dual enroll students or specifically for the subsect of that, which is homeschool. So they're going to be in classrooms with people with a cross-sectional of our community in the same way that they would go to work. And so our faculty, as you've heard many say here today, are the key to that, to making that successful. So they're not only making sure their classroom is full of the content for learning, but they're creating a culture and environment where people learn to work together and learn together.
According to CNBC, North Carolina was the number one state for business 2 years running. We got that award, if that's the word for it, again this year, due to what they described as our world-class workforce. How much of that is due, Tracy, to the efforts of community colleges like Central Piedmont in training those workers?
Well, I'll admit I am a little biased, but I would say the community colleges are really the heart of driving not only economic growth, but economic mobility in the state. When we look at economic growth, we look at, we've already talked about 58 colleges all within 30 minutes of wherever you are, being able to supply a wide variety of programming, whether you are in Murphy or Manio, based on the needs of that area. Really, our talent, our gift has been being able to be flexible, to be responsive. All of our colleges have worked on our economic impact, being able to see what's driving the industries in our region and our area, and being able to stand up those types of programs, whether they lead towards a degree or some type of certification or diploma, being flexible in what that criteria is and being able to provide a variety of different resources to not only make sure that our students leave us workforce ready because they have the skills, but because they are talented people who have the additional, what once upon a time was called soft skills. But we do focus on making sure that they are critical thinkers, writers, and listeners as well. And so being able to provide that type of flexibility for us here in Mecklenburg County has been valuable, but definitely across the state, that accessibility is really unmatched.
Hannah, you wanted to mention that North Carolina is a national model for that dual enrollment program that we were talking about a few minutes ago, where high school students get credits for college while they're still in high school. We're also a kind of a role model for what's going on with workforce development. Our state was cited by Josh Wright, an executive vice president of the labor analytics firm Lightcast, as having, quote, one of the most competitive community college systems in America, attuned to the needs of industry. But there is a flip side to that. Companies used to have their own training programs that they paid for, and now they outsource it to community colleges here and around the country and to other educational institutions. And they're doing that at taxpayer expense. So aside from bragging rights on CNBC, what is the return on investment? And I'm not sure which one of you should get this question. Are the benefits to North Carolina taxpayers for becoming the training ground for these major corporations, are the taxpayers' benefits greater than the cost to those taxpayers?
I can jump in. Yeah, I would say absolutely. I think it was 2 years ago, there was a report done in partnership that was funded by the General Assembly that showed that the community college system, community college system's economic impact in North Carolina is a little bit over, I think the number was $19 billion a year. And you can actually look at the breakdown on return of investment for each of the individual 58 community colleges. But I would say across the board, you can see that the return on the dollar is usually double, if not more, for various programs. And that's for people who aren't enrolled in community colleges, but then also for students themselves, their lifetime earnings, their likelihood to go on to further education also increased based on enrollment in community college programs.
So CNBC also points out that our business and competitive rankings 2 years in a row come as the result of workers flocking to take advantage of a booming economy and growing corporate operations here in Charlotte and elsewhere in the state. And despite the growing political divisions that are threatening our rankings in education in North Carolina and quality of life. Earlier this year, Governor Cooper declared a state of emergency in the state's public education system, saying it's clear that the Republican legislature is aiming to choke the life out of public education. They have chronically underfunded the public schools. Witness the Leandro case that is languishing in the courts in North Carolina, which has said that they have chronically underfunded the schools. And they are now funneling large sums of money into these opportunity scholarship voucher programs, which are open to all, no matter the need. Hannah, is this raising eyebrows in the corporate world as they consider our state as a business location? I mean, if you don't have a good primary education, then what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly discussions about this, but I also do think it's important to note that none of this is a zero-sum game. I do think the General Assembly has made several significant investments in the community college's ability to provide and expand workforce training in the last few years, particularly trying to address workforce shortages in healthcare industries. And the community college has really been creative in the last year, responding by proposing a new funding model, which they are calling Propel NC. So the current funding model allocates resources to colleges in proportion to the number of FTE students they enroll in each of their programs. Certain courses receive more state funds than others based on a four-tiered funding model. But under Propel NC, the funding would still remain based on FTE, but would shift the FTE tiers to workforce sectors instead. The idea being that programs that are really seeing a lot of demand, both from employers and from workers, would receive more funding.
Natasha, since you're in charge of student success at Rowan Cabarrus, these opportunity scholarship vouchers are being positioned as a way for students and their parents to avoid the pitfalls that they may find in some public schools by sending their kids to private schools and getting allegedly a better education. And that may in fact be the case. So if that is the case, will it eliminate or enhance the need for community colleges? Because if you're getting a free ride at a public or at a private institution that sets you up for college, do you need community colleges? Does that concern you?
We'll always need community colleges, and that's in my blood, and I'm going to speak it every time I get an opportunity to. I'm sure that's coming across loud and clear. My children, I have a 29-year-old and a 23-year-old, and they both participated in career and college promise programs with the community college system. One of them had a part private school education in K-12 and then went on to public school. My husband is a public school educator, and I came from public schools before coming to the North Carolina Community College system. The public school system is needed, necessary, and the focus should be on strengthening the public school system. And I'm all about opportunities and people having choices, but we need to strengthen what we have invested in so very long. And they're a great partner for community colleges. I want to talk about the impact, though, on our underserved population when we start to talk about limiting those choices or making those choices choices so definitive, as if one is bad and the other is good for all people. We must acknowledge that there are students and families who are needing the support of our public schools, and those need to be funded properly to address that. We're not going to get to any economic goals in North Carolina by leaving out segments of our population. And so it's unfortunate that even in the Career and College Promise program, it's fortunate that all students can participate in that. But then when they graduate from high school, many of them, and I'm talking about our DACA students or our undocumented students, our Black and Brown students who participate in CCP programs, when they're done with their dual enrollment with community colleges, or they've made a choice for a high school that's right for them, when it's time for them to make the choice to go to college, after they've been given tuition waived or a free education, they're told no longer are you considered free or eligible for these grant programs. You must pay out-of-state tuition, and that's very high cost. And so that message sends to them, you're not welcome in a college toward a college education, which sends the message then, therefore, that you won't have the opportunity for economic mobility in the same way that your peers have had it in high school.
Christy, I'm very quickly, because we're running short on time here, I want to talk about another program that we haven't spoken yet, although it has been mentioned, and that is the Apprenticeship NC program that community colleges offer their students and that students participate in. We think of apprenticeships as something out of the 18th century where you're an indentured servant, but that's not exactly how these work. How do these apprenticeships work?
So prior to the role I'm currently in, I was very honored to build our apprenticeship program here at CVCC. So we have a great organization, amazing organization, Apprenticeship North Carolina. They are kind of over to the side from the community college system. But apprenticeship offers also an ability for adult learners to enter the workforce and go to college. But there is an amazing opportunity for high school students. And so we have around 100 apprentices here at CVCC in a variety of areas. And no, it's not just like from 100 years ago, but like a lot of advanced manufacturing, business, cybersecurity, healthcare apprenticeships. And we have a tuition waiver. If a student signs to be an apprentice, either a pre-apprentice before they graduate high school or enter a registered apprenticeship before they graduate high school, they receive a tuition waiver from the state. So it's similar to how CCP has the tuition waiver. But this would enable students, maybe they're currently taking CCP classes and they're a high school student, they can start working for a company, they're paid to work, so they earn while they learn, they can complete their two-year degree in a CTE pathway, and also, like I mentioned, business and cybersecurity, healthcare, lots of areas, and they're able to be employed, they work, they get a tuition waiver, and they're getting that on-the-job training, so that is a valuable resource in our state.
You're getting a double whammy because you're not only getting your educational degree, you're also getting it's not an internship. It is a paid job and an opportunity to climb the ladder within that industry while you're still going to school. We're talking about community colleges here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Before we run out of time, we have to talk about the adult learning component on all this. Hannah has reported in her reporting that adult learners are one of the largest population segments for community colleges, and many of these adults already have college credits under their belts, but they don't have a degree, and at a time when a majority of jobs still require a post-secondary credential. Do we know how many of those adult learners who continue to further their education, ultimately acquire those needed degrees or certifications? Do we know that? Who can take that? Tracy.
I'll say that we're all participating in part of the work around My Future NC, where the goal is to have more credentialed adults between the ages of 25 and 64 by 2030. And so we're actually been working on that. My Future NC has been supportive in giving us different community numbers. And so knowing our service area and what our target is, I know for us, we've got a goal of 25,000 more credentialed adults that we're working towards. So I think we probably all have different pockets. And thank you to Hannah for highlighting it's 2 million by 2030, statewide goal. And we're unified and working towards that.
And you have this program at Central Piedmont called Better Skills, Better Jobs, Better Future. It's aimed at adult learners. How does it differ from other workforce development programs?
Well, this is one where really the focus is on understanding that adult learner really has a need to come back, get that credential. They're balancing, as we've mentioned, I think Christy mentioned at the very beginning of the conversation, meeting learners where they are. Many adult learners are juggling family commitments and they're trying to work as well. And so the idea of, hey, take 2 years off work to come back and get a credential is not realistic for them. Hey, drop your kids off at school for 2 years is not realistic for them. So being able to offer a variety of programs, especially short-term credentialed programs, as well as the wraparound supports has been key, better skills, better jobs.
And we have to leave it at that. Dr. Tracy Clark is Senior Vice President for Strategy and Organizational Excellence at Central Piedmont Community College. Dr. Natasha Lipscomb, Vice President for Student Success at Rowan Cabarrus. Christy Lefevre is Associate Dean of High School Program at Catawba Valley. And Hannah McClellan with Education NC.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.